We finish off Mock Draft Monday here on the podcast with The Athletic's Dane Brugler, the author of The Beast. Man, what an electric episode we have for you today. The Colts add another receiver, and I'm excited but a little conflicted. The Cowboys make two major moves here, one of which shores up their running back position, a person you are absolutely going to want on your fantasy team in 2024. Let's waste no more time. For God's sakes, let's get into it. It's Monday, April 22nd. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and join me to do just that. Very excited to welcome to the show is The Athletic's Dane Brugler. Dane, happy draft week. Appreciate you for doing this, buddy. How's it going?
No, the pleasure's all mine. It's finally here. We're close. It just feels like it feels so far in advance, and then all of a sudden it's here. And so I can't wait to be talking about where these guys end up, but it's still fun to talk about all the possibilities, all the scenarios. We got a couple more days of that.
Listen, I come to the draft process very late, right? Especially with the wide receivers. Like I was still charting mostly free agents even in late March. I mean, shoot, even the Stephon Diggs trade, I had to take a break from prospects to go back to NFL film, which, I mean, what a transition, by the way, Dane, to go from like the Texas offense to the Buffalo right. Bills offense in the NFL. And, it's a lot for your brain to handle. But, you spend all year long doing this. I'm sure this anticipation feeling that somebody like myself is feeling, and a lot of the listeners are feeling, I mean, it must be like tenfold for you to finally kind of see the fruits of your labor, really, like see where these guys end up.
Yeah, and it can be tough at times because you can't do this in a vacuum, right? So you can't help but hear and it's interesting when you different people that I respect, like yourself, come into the process late, and it's like, ooh, who's this guy? Ooh, I like this guy. And you make sure you think about, oh, yeah, like I thought that too. Or there's sometimes where you maybe see it a little bit differently, and so you're second guessing yourself. And it's like, I gotta stick to what the tape told me and stick to my board. And, I've learned over the years to be open-minded while still being confident in your evaluations. And that's not always an easy thing to do when, we're on the outside looking in. So, there's certain resources that maybe we don't have, or as we get closer, there's a more and more that leaks out about whether it could be a medical, it could be character, it could be something that maybe the tape doesn't show. And so, yeah, it's such an interesting process. And when we get to this point, it's like, all right, just ready for it to be here at this point. And thankfully, it almost is.
Yeah, it's funny. I almost consume your work, and I'm a huge fan of your work. I read The Beast every year as much as I can. I'm not going to tell you I read cover to cover, buddy. But I mean, I'm as much as I can.
You can, yeah.
Yeah, as much as I can read it.
385,000 words, so.
Yeah, that's quite a lot, which, shout out to you for doing that. But like, I kind of appreciate that your work that The Beast specifically comes out after I've charted some receivers, because, usually it's the inverse effect of like, all right, I just did all my work, and like, okay, now I can go back, and because I try not to take in anybody's opinion before I do my film work, right? So like, I'll go in and see, I was a perfect example, and I've said this on the show, is like, I charted the first few games of Jermaine Burton's film, and I'm like, why is nobody talking about this guy? And then like, I read what Dane has to say, I'm like, okay, and look, read it, reach out to a few people I trust as well. I'm like, okay, well, now I get it, right? So like, that's been the fun part of like following your work over the years is like, almost like you said, sometimes you see, okay, I do see this, or other times like, wow, I didn't quite see it this way, and it challenges your opinion. So, hey, let's dive into the meat of the show here. What we've been doing on Mock Draft Monday is we've been asking some of the best people across the industry, and we are truly finishing the finale here with one of the best in the industry, in Mr. Dane Brugler. We've been going over their mock drafts to, listen, Dane would back this up. Anybody that does a mock draft, it can be kind of an eye-rolling exercise at times, right? It can be like the editors love this, the internet loves this, but maybe I don't always love this. But there is a fun part of this, Dane, which is the part where you get to kind of put on the GM hat, or at least try to understand these guys and really find a player to team fit that you absolutely love. So we're going to be doing that here with Dane today. But before we get into our specific player to team fits from your mock drafts that you've absolutely loved, I do just kind of want to go over your methodology here, Dane, because I find your work super detailed and find the way you approach this to be some of the best in the industry. So as you're putting together a mock draft, and you just recently put together a 7 round mock draft, you absolute animal. I mean, come on. So like, give us the process of how you get to put these things together.
Yeah, I finished the beast and my reward is a 7-round, 256 pick mock draft.
What a treat.
honestly, there's a part of me that enjoys it because it forces me to really key in on, okay, where are these 30 visits at? What are the trends that certain general managers have? If I'm going to do a mock draft, I'm going to do it, try to be as accurate as I can, try to make as many connections that I can. So I'm tracking all that buzz that I hear, who's visiting who's talking to who. And when you focus in on what certain general managers like to do, what certain thresholds, certain organizations and schemes have, that really kind of narrows down the list of who you're considering at every pick. And so it's not as simple as, okay, the Cowboys have A, B, C needs. Okay, so first round, boom, A need. Second round, B. It doesn't work like that. The real draft does not work like that. So trying my best to line up as close I can, the visits, who's showing interest in what, and, it doesn't always work out that way, but a lot of times, I look back at my 7-round mock draft and I end up getting quite a few of these right. Maybe not even the right round, maybe a round later or earlier, but doing all this tracking and understanding what each front office, what they look for, that helps. Because I think fans need to remember that these draft boards, they're not 350 names. They're 150 names or 120 names. And so each team has such a strict criteria for what they want. And just trying to figure that out, dwindle down the names for each team, who they could be considering. Yeah, that's it's a daunting process, time-consuming process, but it is helpful for me, gets me prepared for draft weekend.
Our lives in the media, Dane, objectively easier, I think, than the people in the league, right? I think that's true. But I would argue that the work of trying to, even just what I do with receivers, like the work of thinking, how does this receiver fit for all 32 teams and like ranking them, and for then fans or readers to come back and be like, hey, you had this guy, your wide receiver, 12, and he was actually the best, like fourth or fifth best receiver from this class. But it's almost like the joy really is not even getting the rankings right. It's that the exercise on this show, really, which is like, yeah, he's just so perfect for this team, so that if you see it on draft day, like round two, some player goes to a certain team, you're just like, oh, that is exactly within their thresholds, what they usually target. And it just makes that picture so clear in the moment.
My rankings at certain positions would look different the day after the draft compared to before the draft. And that's not based off of where, like the number, how early these guys go. It's based off of where they go, exactly to your point, because some teams are a little better equipped at developing. They better understand the scheme fit. And there are times where I really like a player and then he goes to a certain spot and it's like, no, like that. There's no way that's going to work out. Or I don't feel optimistic about it. So yeah, that's definitely a part of draft weekend that, because we're doing this from a very generalized point of view. We don't have a specific scheme that we're scouting for, a specific culture fit, anything like that, just a generalized view. And then once these guys go to their teams in the draft, that's when we can really get in the nitty gritty about, okay, I love this fit because, or I don't because of this. And so, that's a fun part of this.
Yeah, I know this sounds easy to say too, but I tell this to like people who play dynasty fantasy football all the time. Be ready to just like take your preconceived notions about a player and throw them in the trash like the moment you see them on an NFL field. And that's not even from like a how good they are perspective, but perfect examples like Tank Dell last year. I had definitely had my questions about Tank Dell, even though I really obviously liked the on-field profile and the on-field ability, but you just see him in the first few weeks with the Texans, even before he really started popping off production wise. And like, they're giving him all these free releases. They're using him on these like combo routes on outbreakers with Nico Collins, who's, having this breakout season running in breaking routes. So it's just like the draft process. The draft's going to happen this week, on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, but like it really never ends. And our like just education on it really never ends, which is why this is so fun. And like these few months before the draft can be so addicting, but let's jump into it, Dane. Let's talk about your favorite player to team fits from it. We're actually going to jump over across a few mock drafts of yours here, but start off with your first one. Give me your favorite player to team fit that you got for this episode.
So I went to Cincinnati Bengals at pick number 18 in the first round. Byron Murphy, the defensive tackle from Texas. He's one of my favorite players in the draft. And I think he's going to be drafted somewhere in that 8 to 18 range. So if he falls to 18, I love that fit for Cincinnati. 6'1", 300 pounds, explosive through his hips. There's a powerful twitch to his movements that I don't see any other player in this class matching up with. He led Texas in pressures with 46. He was number one in all of the FBS in terms of interior disruption, in terms of the pass rush win percentage. So I love the way he gets vertical. He can leverage gaps. He can make plays versus both the run and the pass. And you look at the defensive tackle paydays this past offseason across the NFL, teams covet those interior disruptors, and the Bengals don't currently have that. They also need someone that's going to help stop the run. So, you know, they brought in Sheldon Rankins, nice player. BJ Hill, he's still there. They need more help up front. And Murphy, he has that disruptive energy that's just, it's interchangeable too. He could be a shaded nose. He could be a three technique. I think he is a perfect fit for the type of player the Bengals want and the type of player they need.
Yeah, the Bengals are such an interesting team because I think there is, and we just talked about them on our Teams That Will Shape the Draft episode last week, where I can see that they're on offense, they're clearly going through a transition era-wise, right? Like the guys that Burrow was brought in, like when he was brought to the team, and then really when he starts firing off, like Tyler Boyd's gone, Joe Mixon's gone, T. Higgins probably in the last year of his contract. You'd think like, okay, this is the time to sort of start to reload that side of the ball. And they can do that obviously with some future picks here. But in the first round, Dane, like, man, that defense was a mess last year. That and especially up the spine. I mean, I felt bad for Lou Anarumo, who I think is a good coach. And he took the head coach interview with the Cardinals, and like midway through last season, I'm like, man, he might never get another one again, just because they do not have good enough personnel on that side of the ball. So this pick specifically seems to, I think, check multiple boxes for them, starts to build up that spine of the defense. And also, like, this is a guy that can maybe be sort of reminiscent of like what Chris Jones gives the Kansas City Chiefs, right? Like in these games, in big games where the Bengals have a lead, like, can he be that? Can he be that type of closer of a prospect for them?
Yeah, I think so. And because he plays a lot of snaps, and first quarter, fourth quarter, consistently disruptive. And you know, he's a fun story too, just learning about his background. He was a linebacker in high school, and his sophomore year, the coaches, they introduced this pressure package where the mic comes down and basically blitzes through the A-gap. And it worked so well that the next game, they're like, all right, sorry, you're a defensive tackle now. And he added weight, and he ended up breaking Von Miller's sack record at DeSoto High School because of it. And so, you know, goes to Texas. He was part of a rotation his first 2 years. And then this past year really blew up. And one thing I do really like about the tape, like I said, you can watch the tape and see him play line up over the center as a nose, as a one technique. You can watch him over the B gap. He can play multiple spots on that defensive line. And I think that's exactly what this team needs, because again, they need help stopping the run, and getting that interior disruption is something that a lot of teams covet, and they don't have it. So you look at their drafting the last couple of years, they've gone defense with maybe not instant contributors, you know, like a Miles Murphy last year, DJ Turner the year before, I think, if I've got that right.
Dax Hill, this too, is another guy that drafted high.
Yeah, yeah. So both for the future, but also he's going to make an immediate impact too. I think he's ready to hit the ground running. The biggest question might be, is he there? I mean, I think he's, you know, the Falcons have done work on him at number 8. That may be more of a trade back situation if they get out of 8 and trade back to 12, 13, 14, whatever it may be. But yeah, there's at least a decent chance that he's not even around at pick 18 for Cincinnati.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up question to you, was you think he really realistically makes it here? Because I know you've been a fan of his during the process and really kind of shined a light on him. So it'll be interesting to see if he can make it this far down the board, because I think stylistically and just everything here, it makes a lot of sense for Cincinnati. Let's stay in the AFC North with your second favorite to team player to team fit here.
So, yep, like you said, AFC North, pick number 20 in the first round, the Pittsburgh Steelers, have them going Graham Barton, the offensive lineman from Duke. You know, every year, it seems like we have one of these guys where they're short arm, left tackle, they're going to move inside and just become a rock solid pro. In some cases, much more than that. Last year, it was Peter Skoronski going to the Titans at, 11 overall. You know, Zach Martin was classified like that way back in the day. And so this year, it is Graham Barton who... he's going to move inside in the NFL. It's not just about the arm length. It's his play style. It's just more conducive to guard or center. But you know, you look at the Steelers, they need help up and down that offensive line. And as they try to figure out, okay, who is the quarterback of the present and the future, but they also have two running backs that can be impact guys. They need to get that offensive line in better shape so they can get the best five out there. And I think the versatility of Barton helps them get the best five out there, whether they're playing him at center, guard, or even if they need him to play tackle in a pinch.
I love this pick. We were just talking recently with Charles McDonald on the show about, like, I think Talese Fuaga is a great fit for them because he's just like a road grader, right? Like, but this is a guy that gives them a little bit, in my opinion, more positional versatility across the offensive line. And just like, hey, can, because you talk to Steelers fans, like, they want a center, right? Like, that has been a big complaint among many complaints offensively for the Pittsburgh Steelers the last few seasons. Matt Canada, quarterback, the whole thing. Like, the center position has been an issue for them. And you're right to point out, like, this is an offense that wants to establish the run. They've been screaming that from the moment, really, I mean, towards the end of last season, but they've got two good backs that, like, they invested a first round pick in Najee Harris. I'm interested to see what they do with, like, his fifth year option at some point. You know, Jaylen Warren is a breakout player for them. They've really been a great find, but they don't quite have the offensive line yet to truly, like, weaponize and maximize this run game. Cause I mean, I'll tell you what, Dane, like, if they take a guy like Barton here, because I agree, this is such a clean fit for them. They take a guy like Barton, you have two quarterbacks who are going to be involved in the run game to some degree. And really, they don't have a wealth of pass catching options. I think the Steelers could A, lead the league in rush attempts this year, like, pretty comfortably, and B, are at a point where, you know, even like fantasy people are, both of these running backs could actually be pretty consistent starters for you, just because if they're able to lock this offensive line down, this could be one of the better rushing ecosystems in the NFL.
I think that's a great point. And it makes a lot of sense when you look at the way this offense, the roster is constructed and the depth chart and kind of where they are, the Steelers, and as they try to build this thing, they're not totally rebuilding, but they're kind of doing it on the fly where some key pieces here and there. Obviously, the quarterback position looks completely different. You mentioned the pass catchers. I think one of the wild cards in this is, okay, where does Brian Thomas Jr. go from LSU? Mm. Is he available at 20? If he's there, he's the type of pass catcher that I think makes the Steelers think twice. Now, this is a organization that is well known for waiting until day two and being very good at identifying those guys, rounds two, rounds three, the receivers that can be outplay where they're drafted and be really solid contributors. But yeah, I mean, and Barton's another guy. You know, we mentioned it with Brian Murphy. Graham Barton's one of those players that I think has a universal approval rating. You know, like, it's just, there's not a lot of teams are going to look at Graham Barton and say, no, not a fit. Like, I mean, maybe he's not a tackle for them. Maybe there's no way he could play tackle for us, but center, guard, there's somewhere you could play Graham Barton and probably give you an upgrade. So there's at least a chance we could see Barton go much earlier than this, somewhere in the teens, and maybe a team trades up to go get Graham Barton. I know the Cowboys really like Barton. So if he falls to 20, if he's there on the board, I think there's at least a pretty good chance Graham Barton is the top player, top graded player on the Steelers board.
I think there's a very good chance of that based on a few people I've talked to. And I also think if Brian Thomas is here, though, like, this might be his floor. Like, if you're doing mock drafts, I feel like if he's not off the board here, I don't know where you have him in your most recent mock draft, because should have done my homework. I didn't.
I had the Bills trading up, actually, with Jacksonville at 17.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. That makes perfect sense there. And like, if he doesn't go off the board before 20, I do think this might be like the floor for him, because I've heard they love Brian Thomas. Everybody kind of wants them to take another character, like faller, right, on day two. From my impression of the Steelers is that they're like pretty. Maybe Mike Tomlin gets another shot at the whole like revitalization project thing, but I think they're kind of sick of that. Like, I think, understandably so, based on the last few seasons. So I think they'd love to just like hit a home run with a guy like Brian Thomas in the first round. So that would be interesting. But I do think, like, in terms of team identity, man, you just get Graham Barton on here and you like start to go to work. You know, Arthur Smith, obviously that's what he wants to do as well. It just makes so much sense. A lot of stars align here. Let's move on to your third player to team fit that you absolutely love here.
So I don't think this one's going to be very popular, but okay. It's one that I really like. And that's number 29, Detroit Lions, Marshawn Nyland, the edge rusher from Western Michigan. I love this fit. And Nyland feels like he's bitten a kneecap or two over his career. Is there a better chance Nyland goes on day two? Yeah, probably. So, but if you ask me my bold prediction for a player that could sneak into the first round, I'm going to say Marshawn Nyland. And look, the Lions showed us last year, they have a very strict criteria for their draft board, right? And they don't really care how anybody else feels. So, Jack Campbell, take a linebacker, top 20. Jahmyr Gibbs, where they took him in the top 15. Like, they don't care. They have a very strong understanding of what they want to be, the culture fits that they want to add, and just the overall profile of the players they want. And I think that with Nyland, I think he fits, and I think there's a good chance at pick 29, he could be one of their higher-rated guys and a player that I think Dan Campbell is going to be all on board with. They want to add depth to that defensive line. And with Nyland, you have a guy that he looks the part. You know, 6'3", 267, tested really well at the combine, 4.75 40-yard dash, 7.02 three-cone at almost 270 pounds is outstanding. And so you watch the tape, you see twitch, you see upfield burst, you see a guy that's still learning how to maybe piece together his pass rush attack, but he has the tools to do it. And if you're picking at 29, you're sacrificing a little bit of something, right? And you're not going to get the perfect player. Nealon's one of those guys who's a little flawed, but if you bet on the things that he does well, his strengths as a player, I can see why the Lions might be really interested in him.
It feels like there's kind of not out of left field, but sort of a pick at the end of the first round every single year. Right. And the Lions also seem to specialize at, oh, wow, like, those type of picks. And the way Brad Holmes is feeling himself right now, I mean, that you get that guy in front of a mic, he's going to let you know,
point.
Like, yeah, he's
going
to let you know that I've been right. He even said, he and Dan Campbell went against the entire scouting department with the
scouts. Love that, I'm sure. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, great. No. That's good consensus building there for sure. But like, he's feeling himself. So this is a guy that he targets that, man, it just makes a lot of sense. Just kind of paint us the picture. Nyland here playing across from a guy like Aiden Hutchinson, who sort of feels like the inverse of what you took. Not that, Aiden's not a big time freak athlete himself, but a guy who's super technically strong and sort of refined there playing across from a guy like this. How do you think that pairing works out for that defense?
Yeah, I think that's ideally, they'd love to find that guy that takes pressure off of Hutchinson, just gives them another guy off the edge that they can rely on to get consistent pressure. And with Nyland, I come back to, because there's so many ways, it's same thing with Byron Murphy. There's so many ways we can, really break these guys down into all these micro categories of they do this, they do that. At the end of the day, give me the guys that hate to be blocked, all right? And Nyland, he's that one of those guys, all right? Whether it's using his long arms, his hands are physical, they're violent, they're heavy, and he's explosive. And so he can push the pocket. He doesn't have the best bend necessarily. He's not that type of rusher, but he can work around blockers. He has twitch through his frame. So whether he's going at you or around you, his best football has yet to happen. I mean, I think you can continue to coach him up. He actually was going to go to Colorado in the transfer portal, to be with Deion Sanders, and then they had a coaching change at Western Michigan, and the new coach was able to convince him to stay. Had a really good year, and if you've never seen Marshawn Nyland before, watch the Eastern Michigan tape and watch him just take over that game. And obviously, it'll get a little tougher at the NFL level, but I think a lot of tools are there for him to really grow into a rotational role as a rookie, starter role after that, and then just be an impact guy for whoever drafts him.
Yeah, it feels like, again, the Lions have specialized in these, their best football is ahead of them, or like, guys that still have some upside to be mined. Feels like they've maximized those guys the last few years. So that makes a ton of sense for this specific pick. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got two skill position players to talk about on the other side. Two very exciting picks right after this. All right, we're back. Dane. This next pick, I am very personally excited about, but also a little conflicted about, and I'll tell you why once you unveil this player to team fit. Go for it.
Okay, we're in the second round. We're at pick 46 for the Colts, and I have them taking Ricky Pearsall, wide receiver from Florida, who I know a fan of yours. This is just a fun one because the fit matches up. Obviously, there's the Florida connection, but you know, reuniting Pearsall, Anthony Richardson. I think when you look at the Colts, I'll be shocked if they don't come away from the first two rounds with at least one pass catcher. You know, they mm-hmm. want to help the young quarterback. And so is it a Brock Bowers in round one, a Brian Thomas Jr. in round one? Or do, say they take the corner, say they take a Terrion Arnold or a Quinyon Mitchell, or say they go in a different direction, round two, there'll be several options they could go. And I mean, Ricky Pearsall is just kind of sitting there blinking red lights. If he's there, if he makes it that far, I think that'd be the ideal fit, ideal pairing for both sides.
Okay, so let me tell you why I'm conflicted about this, because okay. Like you mentioned, I love Ricky Pearsall. I'm a huge fan of his game. I love the way he separates. I love that, like, older prospect, but he's not out there out-athleting people. Like, he's a technician that wins with his route running. I think he beats man coverage. He's a player that can line up at all three positions, probably primarily a flanker slot player in the NFL. But again, just great hands, too, can make the outstanding catch, just ultra reliable. I've said he can be like a quarterback's best friend, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe eventually grow into a guy that you're feeding 120 targets to in the NFL. I think he has like that kind of range of outcomes there. We're pretty high floor, but also kind of an underrated ceiling, in my opinion. I've got him ranked as my wide receiver 6 in this class. Like, I really like his game. Yeah. Like you said, I'm a fan of his. But one more positive thing, I do love that in this hypothetical scenario, the Colts haven't done what the like dumb Panthers kind of approach from a few years ago when they had Cam Newton. Dave Gettleman's like, well, yeah, Cam Newton's inaccurate. We'll just get him these big targets. And you got a bunch of big guys that can't separate. You're getting like, you got Michael Pittman. You've got Josh Downs here. You've got Ricky Pearsall. Like, you've got separators for a guy that had collegiate accuracy issues. So again, that's all the stuff I like about it. I do just kind of look at that Colts receiver room, and I'm also a big Josh Downs fan. Like, I'm looking to see if Chris Ballard's got himself a reception perception subscription after this if he takes Ricky Pearsall. I know he doesn't. I know he's just drafted these athletes. I'm also a big fan of Michael Pittman. Alec Pierce is a guy I had some hope for coming into the league. I just don't think he's fully taken that step as anything more than just a role player out at X. But I just wonder, like, if, in my opinion, I think if they come away with a pass catcher from this draft, it's somebody to sort of compete in that vertical X receiver role with Alec Pierce. Like, a Brian Thomas made a lot of sense to me if they wanted to go with that at pick 15. Obviously they could use a tight end kind of addition there because Shane Steichen loves to maximize that position. So am I like overthinking it a little bit, just being like, hey, is Ricky Pearsall a little too samey, a little too overlappy with like the off-ball flanker position that Michael Pittman plays and kind of that interior slot position that Josh Downs I think can really grow and develop into?
Yeah, and I think that with the Colts, they're kind of, if they added Pearsall, I think they've got a couple, I mean, with Pittman and Pearsall, a couple guys that could play across the formation in different ways. And, you know, I think, because say they don't take Brian Thomas at 15, who's that X receiver on day two that would, you know, like, it's not a position where I think there's a lot of depth in this class, right? I mean, who are the X's you like on day two?
I mean, I think A.D. Mitchell ends up going in the first round, so I don't think he really makes sense here. It's like the next X receiver prospect when I look at my rankings is probably like Javon Baker. And I think Baker is a little overlappy with Alec Pierce, right? And I'm like kind of mixed on Baker. I can talk myself in, I can talk myself out as like a downfield X prospect. Like, and again, he's a guy I could see end up maybe being more of a vertical Z in the NFL too, mm-hmm. even though he plays a lot on the line of scrimmage. So like to your point there, I don't think there is a next natural step down at the X receiver position there.
Right. And that's what makes it tough. But I also, you know, this is why you hire Shane Steichen, you know, because of the way he wants to be on offense, the way that he can use these receivers. Even if there is an overlap, even if there is a little bit of similarities between your receivers, I think that they are versatile enough where they can play across the formation and give you some different things. And so with Pearsall, he has that inside outside versatility. Is he a true X? No. I mean, he's not a home run hitter. He's not a guy that's going to be winning vertically all that much. But I still think that there's enough there that if depending on how you use him, if it's the quick game, you know, I think most people have seen that catch against Charlotte that he had, like the ball skills, the tracking skills are just so exceptional. You could use him in a variety of roles. And I think the Colts would figure it out and be just fine doing that.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm just pulling up Pearsall's reception perception profile right now, and it's very funny. Like the first thing I'm seeing is I wrote you get exposure to see him playing a wide variety of roles, literally like word for word there. And you know, like I said, I think he can play. The reason I ended up ranking him over Ladd McConkey, who I'm also a big fan of, is just like I think he can hack it. I think Ladd can hack it outside as a vertical flanker receiver, kind of in that like Tyler Lockett-ish way. But I think Pearsall gives you a little bit more pop against press coverage, 51st percentile in reception perception, success rate versus press. So like that's, you know, it's fine in terms of the prospects I'm charting. That's not like a huge negative for him. 87th against man coverage. Like, so I'm a little bit playing devil's advocate here, Dane, because I do also see how this makes sense. And really, like, I think the crux of this, it comes back to Pittman, who they just gave a long-term extension to. I think Michael Pittman's game, who I've always thought has been really good against press coverage and also been kind of like underutilized as a downfield player, I think he can play X receiver for them. Like, I don't think he has to be this crossing route merchant detached from the formation. Like, I think in this scenario, I see your vision here of, we're going to have Pittman playing X sometimes. We're going to have Pearsall playing X sometimes. I don't think you're like Josh Downs, I think, again, just because of the size, even though he's a good press coverage beater and good route runner, all that stuff, probably want him inside. But I do see them creating a lot of like mismatches and potential headaches if this is their three wide receiver set.
No doubt. And I think Pearsall, let's be honest, like a lot of these white receivers get, you know, cornered in the slot role. And he's 6'1", 190 pounds. Like, he's a good sized player. Yeah. And he's been around a while. He was learning from Brandon Ayuk at Arizona State his first year. So he's been around a while, and I think he is NFL ready, step in from day one. And that versatility across the formation, I think, is key for what Steichen wants, ideally, for his receiving core. And yeah, I think this would be it would be a lot of fun. You know, I all I know is I'm definitely watching the Colts offense to see how it works out.
Number one, yeah, I'm with you, buddy. I'm actively already starting. It's only April here. I'm already starting to kind of try to like, okay, how can I talk myself down from being overexcited about the Colts? Which, by the way, I've done that before because I've liked these receivers. I just, man, Anthony Richardson year two should be pretty exciting with these guys and the way Shane Steichen talks about Richardson. And you're just coming in here putting Pearsall on the top. That is not helping me, Dane. but we did do a little bit of good consensus building there. Like, kind of this is what's going to happen in draft rooms and has been talking about in draft rooms. Like, how do we fit these guys together on the roster? Your next player to team fit, I don't think will take a lot of stretching to see why this one's really going to work out for this particular team.
Yeah, and once we get to day two, Friday night, one of the key storylines is going to be, when does that first running back come off the board? And so I've got Dallas Cowboys at 56 taking Jonathan Brooks, Texas running back. If Brooks makes it to 56, I just have a hard time seeing Dallas pass on him. I think the pairing makes way too much sense. You know, like, often when I'm asked who's going to be the top rookie running back this year, my answer is usually whoever the Cowboys draft, because you look at that depth chart, it's like, okay, Rico Dowdle, and no disrespect to these guys, but Rico Dowdle, Deuce Vaughn, they just signed Royce Freeman. Whoever the Cowboys draft, they're going to draft a running back. We know that. It's just a matter of, where is it, second round, third round, fourth round? Whoever they draft is going to play an immediate role in some way, shape, or form. With Brooks, he was viewed by many as running back one before the ACL injury. Cowboys have never been shy about taking risks on injury or character guys in that second round. They never will be shy about doing it. Brooks is expected to be cleared by July, so he'll be fine for training camp. And the Cowboys have better information than anybody, because who did Brooks' surgery? Dan Cooper, who's the Cowboys' head physician. So you factor in Brooks' talent, the Cowboys' connections, just the need at the position, and it just makes a ton of sense. So, could he be gone at 56? Yeah, sure. That's definitely a part of this. We've never seen a running back fall that far, the first running back off the board. The only other time we've seen a running back in the history of the draft, the only other time we've seen a running back fall outside the top 50 was Bishop Sankey in 2014. He was like 54th overall. So if the first running back doesn't go till 56, we're making draft history. And, you know, I think some teams might be scared off by that ACL. But, you know, Todd Gurley was coming off an ACL, almost the same exact timeline, and he went top 10. So I think there's a realistic chance Brooks, Cowboys, 56, it makes a lot of sense.
Just a lot of threads to pull on here with Brooks. But I do want to ask you, like, had he not had this injury, like, let's live in a hypothetical world, like, where do you think he would have ranked compared to some previous draft picks, right? Because is this a guy that with no injury, he's still maybe like a high second rounder, or is this a guy that could potentially have snuck into the mid to late first round?
I don't think he would have gotten to the first round, but I do think it's fair to say top 50 was very realistic for him. And with that injury, he probably, there is a half round to full round discount on him. So early to mid second round, I think that's absolutely fair. You know, for some teams, as they look for running back one, I think he would have been that high for several teams.
And let me tell you what, again, as Dane said, Dane gave you the best fantasy advice without even knowing he was giving you the best fantasy advice there, which is just, hey, who's the running back you want? Whoever the Cowboys draft, okay? Yeah. Whether it's Jonathan Brooks or whatever. Like, I was in a dynasty mock, because I know you really care about this stuff, Dane. I was in a dynasty mock draft, like, you know, really good stuff. Dynasty mocks before the NFL draft. Super sharp. Right. That's what the real sharks do. You know, and I'm sitting there at the 11th overall pick in this fake rookie draft, and I'm like, I mean, if I know who's playing for the Cowboys, like, I'm taking this guy here, and I don't even really care, you know, about the scouting report, because the opportunity is going to be there, right? Like, the opportunity will be there for that player. As it is, it's before the draft, I just ended up going with AD Mitchell, just because, you know, that's the, you know, he's a high upside receiver, whatever. But again, post draft, I think that if Jonathan Brooks ends up with the Cowboys, my prediction is that I'm not even actually going to be able to sit there and stare at him at the 11th overall pick. I think he will actually go over a lot of these other players, like some of these receivers, like the AD Mitchells or the Ladd McConkeys, depending on where they land, right? Like, right. I think that Brooks will have that sort of, I think he'll be able to move the needle that way because of some of the talent that you laid out. And again, just the overall opportunity. Kind of last question on this, because you brought up that 2014 draft example of Bishop Sankey, 54th overall. Bishop Sankey did not really work out, but like, Jeremy Hill was off the board the very next pick at 55. Carlos Hyde at 57, right there. And like, those two guys had some real nice moments in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Like, Carlos Hyde had some really nice seasons. Jeremy Hill had some really nice seasons. Then there was a few guys in the third round, like Trey Mason and Charles Sims, and, you know, later on, like Terrence West, Jerick McKinnon. But specifically, like, Carlos Hyde and Jeremy Hill, again, that was sort of like that running back run, right? So my question to you, Dane, is when are you pinpointing this running back run to start? And does Brooks start it? Or is it like some other names that we kind of have to watch out here for?
I think somewhere in that late second is where it starts. And I think Trey Benson from Florida State or Jonathan Brooks, those are the two most likely to start it. And there's several, and it's tough because there's a lot of these guys that you like, but everybody's running back 1 through 7 looks completely different. And it depends on the type of running back you want. If you want more of a pass catcher, you're going to like one player over another. If you're looking for someone that is going to bring you physicality and size, then maybe you're looking at Audric Estime or Braylon Allen. And, you know, a guy like Blake Corum has a very specific skill set. And obviously the Chargers are going to draft him in the third round. So it's, you know,
of course,
it's going to be somewhere probably in that late second. And then once that Band-Aid's ripped off, they're probably going to come off the board pretty quickly.
Yeah, if Brooks is around for Dallas because of the surgery connection, like you mentioned, and just overall, I think the style fits with what that team needs. And, you know, I don't know if you have a player comparison for him, but I've seen, you know, Aaron Jones, I've seen Jamal Charles. And I mean, that type of guy, I mean, Aaron Jones, obviously familiarity with Mike McCarthy, too. But just somebody like that to bring some big play juice to this run game, Dane, because like Tony Pollard, you know, you look at his end of season stats, they were fine. Yeah, you look at like the team's success rate, they were fine. Just like, nobody that played the Cowboys last year was scared of the run game ever. And I think with Brooks, they might be.
Well, and it is funny that you mentioned the big play potential specifically, because my comp for him, I don't love this comp, but it's who it reminded me of. Stylistically, he reminded me a lot of Kenyon Drake. But I think Brooks has much better vision and actually gives you big play potential. So it's there's a caveat there. There's a qualifier with that comparison, but stylistically, that's the style of player that I see. It's just I think he's going to be a much more impactful running back than Kenyon Drake ever was.
Yeah, I'm an idiot, but there was definitely a time where Kenyon Drake was having some moments with the Dolphins where I was like, ooh, is this...
Maybe,
is this a thing? Is this a thing? It wasn't a thing for very long, but I think Jonathan Brooks just might be. But all right, Dane, we're going to finish it off here with your player to team fit that you made in your mock draft, but you didn't love in your mock draft. And we actually are staying with the Dallas Cowboys here.
We are. Just go back to the first round. Tyler Guyton, number 24, to the Cowboys. Guyton's tough because on one hand, it feels like a perfect Cowboys pick here. You keep Tyler Smith at left guard, which is, I think, what they would prefer to do. And then in this situation, it honestly kind of mirrors Tyron Smith a little bit because you had a super talented right tackle in college who a little bit of a work in progress, but that also allowed him to fall to you in the draft. But he had the traits worth betting on. It's just the Cowboys are in a situation right now where it's kind of win now and they need someone to hit the ground running and make an impact for them and be a solid contributor. Guyton, I just don't know how quickly they're going to trust him to be on the field and be someone that they can rely on. And so there's very much a lot of projection to his game. And he's almost 6'8", 322 pounds, a really good athlete. I mean, seeing him on the move as a blocker, as a puller, it's pretty phenomenal. But the consistency level, when is it going to be up to what the Cowboys are needing for him to be out there? So I struggle with this one because the Cowboys, they're going to address the offensive line. It just might be as simple as who falls. If Graham Barton falls to 24, that's the pick. And in that scenario, TJ Bass is your new left guard and Tyler Smith kicks out the left tackle. But if in this scenario, Graham Barton's off the board, maybe they don't like Jackson Powers-Johnson as much. Do they feel comfortable with one of these tackles, especially right tackles, moving them to the left side and kind of being a work in progress and just working through the speed bumps that are ultimately going to happen this year? So the Cowboys are kind of tough there at 24.
Cowboys are tough. Just trying to find these like machinations of these offensive linemen, because I'm not a fan of like moving guys around a bunch. Like I kind of want you to get a doctorate degree at one position instead of like a bunch of majors and minors. Okay. Like, and be able to move around, which is kind of been the case with Tyler Smith so far, although he's been a very, very good player. Guyton is interesting. You know, we just did our offensive line show and you know, our mutual friend and colleague, Nate Tice, doesn't have him as one of his top 10 offensive linemen. So I'd like to see Guyton jump up in these first rounds. And I know it's a deep offensive line class, so like being, you know, offensive lineman number 11 is really not that big of a deal. This is just a great class. He's been an interesting guy to sort of peg down here. Producer Colin, who is a giant Cowboys homer, points out that Brian Broaddus, local Dallas, you know, former scout, media legend, you know, you've done some work with him in the past, said that Guyton can be like kind of Flozell Adams like, which I think is pretty interesting if you look back at Cowboys history there.
If it turns out like Flozell Adams, that's a win. And I think they'd sign up for that at pick 24. But obviously this team needs linebacker help, running back help. You know, could they surprise us and go with a receiver or a corner there? Like, they have a lot of needs on this roster. And so offensive line is where it starts, though, because if they want to keep Dak Prescott upright, they want to get the run game going with whoever's back there, they need to get the front five in order. And I think that if they had to play a game tomorrow, I don't think a lot of people would be able to tell you who, you know, three fifths of the offensive line would be for the Cowboys. You know, they're not household names. They're not guys that are established. And so it's tough because in the first round, you might be wiped out of your options ideally that you want. And they're picking at a spot where, you know, most teams, they have 18 to 20 first round picks. And so they're drafting at a spot where they probably won't have any first round grades on the board. So could they reach for, say, a linebacker like a Junior Colson? Can they trade out of there, trade back and take a player like Kingsley Suamatia from BYU, the left tackle? This is not, while I think it is a top heavy offensive tackle class, I don't think it's deep. I think interior offensive line, I think, is deep. But the offensive tackles, these guys are going to go fast. We're going to see several in the first round, a couple in the second round. And then it's kind of like musical chairs. If you don't have your chair when the music stops, you're going to be without that tackle. And so I think we're going to see a lot of tackles maybe go earlier than we expect. You know, your Patrick Pauls from Houston, Blake Fisher from Notre Dame, Roger Rosengarten, Washington. These guys are going to be off the board pretty quickly.
And if Dallas is left without a chair when the music stops there at the tackle position, I think that's pretty problematic because,
yes,
man, it just think about the two things they need to accomplish on offense. And I get it. They lose Dan Quinn. They bring in Mike Zimmer. Maybe that's a fresh perspective there. There are needs on defense. You mentioned linebacker. They have to get tougher against the run after what happened with that team last year. There's no question about that. Secondary help is also needed. You know, there's a lot of things to accomplish on that side of the ball, but just think about on offense, like, they got to run back that efficiency passing game wise last year. They've got to do that if they're going to hope to compete for a championship, or, you know, at least not get embarrassed. At least not get embarrassed in the wild card round. Save your embarrassment for the divisional round when you do this whole thing. And they've got to get better as a rush attack team. So without a tackle there, that's going to be pretty problematic. But Dane, like you did mention the receiver position, I cannot get out of my head that, like, I keep saying some of these teams, like Miami, Dallas is on my radar about this. Like, you need to just grow up, eat your vegetables, stop eating candy, like stop thinking about, well, how could we get faster? Dolphins, can we draft Xavier Worthy? No, draft a lineman, grow up, eat your vegetables, eat your meat and potatoes. Let's be serious here. I can just see the Cowboys, and it would, listen, without Michael Gallup, Brandon Cooks, how long is he going to be around? Like Jalen Tolbert, has he not been he's not been a needle mover at this point? CeeDee Lamb, he'll be signed eventually, but he is technically in the last year of his deal. It would be justifiable to get a receiver, but I can feel all of like Cowboys Nation being like, no, we don't need another receiver, but it is on the table.
I'm here for the mayhem. I mean, that's the best part of draft day, is when the first thing happens that no one really expected to happen, and it's just pandemonium, and the domino effect, how it changes the rest. Like, I'll go 0-32 on my mock draft. I don't care. Give me intriguing picks and the things we didn't see coming. Receiver for the Cowboys at 24, I think that would certainly qualify.
Yeah, that would certainly qualify. And I'm with you, Dane Brugler, that everything that is the best part about the NFL draft is the chaos, it's the mayhem, it's the unpredictability. And we are here, we are in draft week. Dane, can't thank you enough for taking some time out to do this show, to wrap up our Mock Draft Monday series. It's been absolutely awesome, and you crush it with the finishing blow here. Tell the people what you're going to be doing here during draft week, what they can check out leading up to Thursday and Friday night.
Yeah, myself, Nate Tice, Robert Mays will be in Detroit for 3 days of the draft and covering every pick. You can follow us on YouTube. We'll be doing that. And then, of course, make sure you have the Beast, the draft guide, by your side. It will have you covered first round through the seventh round and then into the free agency. No other resource has, you know, testing data for over almost 2,000 players and all the scouting reports, all the background information. So I promise you will not be disappointed. You just have to be a subscriber to The Athletic, and it's included. So I think it's a pretty good value. So check it out.
You should 100% subscribe to The Athletic, and you should 1,000% read The Beast, man. Maybe, you know, you all should read it cover to cover, okay? I admitted that, you know, I didn't read cover to cover, but you all out there should read it cover to cover because it's great work. Like Dane said, nobody does more detailed work on the background, on the testing, everything like that. And yeah, make sure you're watching The Athletic's live show. Yahoo's also got a draft live show too. So what I want you to do is just go
two
pick
screens.
By pick.
Yeah, hey.
Yeah, two screens, okay? Yeah. Everybody's got how many laptops, phones, iPads, TVs, you know, connected devices you got, have them both on, you know, put the sound on for those guys. Cause I'm a big fan of all three of you. All three, you know that I love all three of your work. So you go pick one pick with them. You listen to us knuckleheads. Like you do a little side by side there. You can get that done. That's going to be great. Dane, appreciate you again for taking the time. That's going to do it for us. It's going to do it for Mock Draft Monday, but man, we are just getting started this draft week. We are pumping out a bunch of content before Thursday night. Tomorrow, we're going to continue our teams that will shape the draft series here on the pod. We're going to cover both the lurking quarterback teams and the teams in the top 10 that I can't quite figure out. Thor Nystrom is going to join us for that episode. Until then, we're out.